I've bought a computer.
Computer? We don't understand computers.
It's an Apple.
He's got a computer.
A computer?
Apple has sold more personal business computers than anyone else in New Zealand. Anyone can learn the basics in just 30 minutes.
Watch this.
Ooh.
Apple Computer. Simply good business.
Great idea, that computer, Jim.
Hello, and welcome to the Cold Cassidy Best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Aloy.
Erfan Aloysia?
Messed up your own name.
I've changed my name to Erfan Aloysia. I think it rolls off the tongue better, don't you? Yeah. Also joining us, he and his family just returned from their vacation in Japan, and the Japanese government has politely requested that they never come back. Leander Caney is finally back with us.
Hey, Erfan. Oh, konnichiwa, I should say.
Konnichiwa, more appropriate. Also with us, he loves playing hard to get with those local lady boys. Buster Caney is here.
Hey.
Such a tease,
you know me.
Dude.
Sorry.
Everyone's in Asia except for me.
Yeah, so what it cup, Buster?
What?
So what it cup?
Oh,
isn't that how you say hello in Thai?
Yeah.
wasn't I literally asking you that last show and you said you didn't know?
Yeah, me?
I know.
I was asking Buster how to say that and he didn't know.
No, I know hello and I know how much, man. That's about
it. Oh, you knew how much. That
and
was
I know,
what it
thank
was.
You. That's about it, yeah. I mean, you don't got to know too much to get around.
How do you say hello again, Leander?
Sawadika.
Right.
I like how Buster puts the local accent on
yeah,
it, too.
Yeah, that's you great. Got to.
Well, Leander's finally back with us. I think you said you were going to be gone for like 2 weeks. How long were you gone? Like six?
Three.
You've been gone forever.
Just three.
You sound chipper. I am ready to roll.
I'm rejuvenated, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good because we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about this show. Let me fill you in. This is what we have on the docket today. We've got more juicy details on iPhone 8, plus a possible date for the keynote, which is crazy because if you think about it, we could all have new iPhones in the next 4 weeks. That's a distinct possibility.
Yeah, right.
It's literally right around the corner.
Yeah.
It's leaks galore now. Also, an interesting twist in Apple's work on their autonomous car project. Leander will be filling us in about that. I'm going to tell you why the 13-inch MacBook Pro might soon become your favorite Mac. It might soon become mine. Interesting developments that just came to light. I'll tell you guys about that. And then we're going to wrap up with a story time with L. Caney. He's going to share some of the highlights of his whirlwind tour of Japan and other defenseless Asian lands. Because you weren't just in Japan, right?
Leander, Thailand.
Did you know you were going to Thailand?
Well, yeah.
Okay, because you said you were going to Japan when you left, and then Buster just told me, like, oh, Leander was in Thailand. He just left.
Well, it was Japan, then Thailand.
Okay, so you knew. That was all planned.
Yeah. Well, I didn't plan it. Tracy totally planned it. And I didn't know a lot of the details. I just went where I was told. But
you're so lucky. You have your own tour guide wherever you go, right? Like, she just plans the entire thing.
Yeah, but she's also kind of, there's a downside to that, in that she wants to see everything. So it's like we do about eight things every day. And
real slave
10
driver.
Different hotels and, you know, lots of travel.
Got it. I know exactly what you mean. You're just trying to chill. It's just trying to make you go see another museum of ancient koi.
Right.
Exactly. Another one.
The Chopstick Museum. Fascinating.
That actually might be pretty cool.
No way. Did you guys go to a Chopstick Museum?
No, I made that up. But we went to a bunch of
because I could see them having
like
one
that.
Of them out here or something.
There's got to be a Chopstick Museum. There's probably a long, rich history of chopsticks that you two fellows wouldn't appreciate. I definitely would because I'm cultured, but
right,
yeah,
we're pretty good with chopsticks now though.
Oh, did you not know how to use them when you went?
Well, I did, but you know, I don't get a lot of practice, so. But
I heard that, I don't know if this is true at all, this is just something that I heard, that most American adults eat chopsticks at like a fourth or fifth grade level of like Japanese kids.
Yeah, I'll believe that.
Even that high, I would be, you know, I would have thought it was
maybe
even lower.
Second grade.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how they measure that. Like, what are the metrics to know how good you are with a pair of chopsticks? I mean, I could pick up noodles and stuff. That's pretty hard, right?
Well, no, not really.
Did you just see, like,
okay, what's the hard stuff to eat with a chopstick?
We're getting the last stuff off the plate.
Yeah, like the precision that a lot of Asians have. Like, I am like super impressed with a lot of them. And here I am, like, clumsy. Just I'm horrible with them.
Fumbling.
Yeah.
I guess the ultimate level is the Mr. Miyagi level, where there's like a mosquito buzzing your head, and you just whoop, and you just catch it, right? And then you just eat it. Yeah. There are probably guys that are that good with chopsticks.
Oh, easily, yeah. I think isn't there a movie with Jackie Chan where he's doing a little bunch of chopstick tricks like that? And it's supposed to be really probably. Pretty amazing.
I haven't seen it. Do you remember what movie that is?
No.
Dang, we need to know what movie that is. Okay, well, before we jump into this delicious, very tasty, very spicy iPhone 8 news, let's do a little quick thanks to the Cultimac Watch Store. Leander, right? We don't talk about the Watch Store probably often enough, but Cultimac has a Watch Store with all sorts of beautiful, and I would say somewhat exotic, watch straps. I mean, there's normal stuff, and then there's like really cool exotic stuff.
Right. Yeah. And it's a great selection. I mean, we've been building it out. We've added like two or three new companies, and new collections, new bands. So, you know, I think it's the best place on the web to check out accessories for Apple Watch.
I think you might be right, actually.
Because there's no really good one-good stop shop. You know, there's Amazon, of course, but the problem with Amazon is that there's all kinds of cheap stuff there, right? And if you want to get something cheap, that's the place to go. If you want to get something good, I think Cultimac Watch Store is the place to go. You know, like we've Amy, who runs the store, has been really doing a really good job of adding new people. We've just added a company from Brooklyn that make called E3, mm-hmm. and they do really nice leather bands. And we've been doing some sports bands, silicone sports bands from Nomad, and they've been doing really, really well. Like we just launched them last week, and they've been going like gangbusters. They've been really popular.
What's different about those sports bands than the Apple Watch sports bands?
They're a little less expensive than the sport bands, and they're not quite as they're more stealth. Yeah. You know, they're just in
you mean
black.
Like a little bit more minimalist?
Yeah. They're not in all the fancy colors that Apple does. There's one that has a black outside and a yellow inside, so it kind of looks kind of like the Nike sports band.
Mm-hmm.
And it's $49.95. That one's been really popular. People like that one a lot.
Well, if people are interested in checking out the watch bands, you can head over to, I think, store.cultimac.com, right?
That's it. Yep.
Store.cultimac.com. And along with these minimalist ones that Landair was just describing, they've got some really exotic stuff. They have stuff made from like alligator penis, ostrich eyelids. I mean, all sorts of weird stuff that you would never expect to see on a sports band. Wasn't there one made of like an actual cow? With like the hair still on, right?
Yeah, it's and they've been dyed to make it look exotic. So there are some calfskin ones that are all, you know, they still have the hair on them,
right?
So, and one has like a leopard skin look, another one has a tiger print, another one has like a cow, you know, the black and white sort of Frisian cow pattern.
Yeah.
So they're very distinctive looking. They're actually made out of cow leather, so they're not. They're not actually an endangered exotic animal that was killed to make a watch strap. You know, they've been dyed, and in fact, there are some exotic ones though. We have stingray, which
that was the weird one I was thinking of.
Yeah, that was a strange one, and I didn't realize this, but the stingray was popular in Japan, and it was used to make hilts for samurai swords because it remains non-slip when covered in blood.
Really?
Yeah. So it has a really good. They have it has really good non-slip.
It's like a natural rubber,
right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, it's a stingray
non-slip grip. And then great.
We had some ostrich ones, ostrich feathers. That's actually really popular. Those are popular in the Middle East.
Uh-huh.
They look very, really distinctive because they have these big follicle holes where the ostrich feathers go in.
Oh yeah.
So it seems like it has these big dots on it. Really distinctive looking. That's from a company called Ulu, and they do some really nice, beautiful colors. You know, they deep dye these hides, and they look really nice. They're really attractive.
You just reminded me. This is total tangent, but there's like an actual. I don't know if it's called a disease or a condition where people have a really hard time looking at things with lots of holes in them, and it's a very common condition. Most people actually that I've met have it. And there was this video that PewDiePie did a while ago on YouTube where he was just watching videos of things that I'm describing, like there was one fish that had like a bunch of holes in its skin, and its larva would like live in it until they were like old enough to like swim away. And it's like watching videos of like that kind of thing. I couldn't even make it more than 15 seconds through that video because I got so disgusted and creeped out by it. And I feel like
okay, well, thanks for adding that to the plug for the
which one was it? Scraps. The ostrich skin. I'm not sure I could roll with that, but if you don't have my condition,
well, we've got some.
Do you know what condition I'm talking about? Have you ever seen something with lots of holes in it that totally grossed you out?
No,
like cow stomach is a perfect example.
Well, yeah, but because of the holes or because it's cow stomach?
Because
it's
no,
fried.
Because of all the holes in it. Like it just has lots of little holes in it.
So like a certain kind of phobia, hole phobia.
Yes, exactly. I wish I could remember the name of it. I can't.
Yeah, no, I don't know that. I know there's a phobia for just about everything, but I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, for those of you that don't have the phobia, you'll love the I'm sitting here taking a big dump like ostrich skin.
We'll put a warning on that.
You're gonna love the ostrich skin watch strap as long as you don't have a phobia of it, like I do. Okay. Let's move into some. That's store.cultimac.com, by the way.
Right.
Let's move into some Apple news, some iPhone 8 news. So, as I said, we could be on the heels of the Apple 8 keynote event, aka Apple iPhone Pro, which is what they're actually going to call it. I think we've all agreed, except for Leander. And there was a report that came out today from a website called Mac Forever, which said Apple plans to unleash its device in just a few weeks. Has anyone ever heard of Mac Forever? I don't think I've ever even heard of these guys, and I'm kind of wondering if they're actually legitimate.
They're legitimate.
They are?
Yeah, I read the Apple
They've
News.
They've come out with accurate stories before?
Yeah, they're French, or wait, no, Portuguese. No, French. I can't remember. French or Portuguese, one of the two.
One of those. I don't think I've ever heard of them, but I'll take your word for it. So they said that Apple's keynote is allegedly slated for September 12th, when the company will reveal three new iPhones. We, of course, don't know if these reports are accurate yet, but Apple does usually host iPhone keynotes in the middle of September. So we're literally right around the corner from this. It feels weird because I feel like I've had my 7 Plus for ages. I feel like I've had it for way longer than a year.
Well, I got a 7 Plus like two days before I left for Asia. I feel really stupid.
Oh, you upgraded?
Well, I had to because I broke my other iPhone cliff jumping right before I left.
Oh, that's right.
Typical.
That's right. That sucks, dude. So, here's what we think we know about it so far. This report also just came out. It is going to have an OLED display, which we already knew, but it's going to be available in 64 gig version, a 256 version, and a 512 gigabyte version. And I believe this report came from Ming-Chi Kuo, so this is actually probably going to be accurate. And all three of the phones will have 3 gigabytes of RAM included. I wonder how much that 512 gig is going to cost. Like,
dude, it's going to be like $1,600. Yeah, it's going to.
Wouldn't surprise me if it was $1,600.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if they came in at $1,100 for the lowest tier iPhone,
well,
or
there's a new report today, like you know, saying that the price is probably going to be the lowest price is probably going to be $999
for 64. Oh God, jeez. And then 256. I mean, how much are they going to charge for the extra storage, right? They usually do it in $100 increments.
Right.
Yeah. But these are big upgrades in storage. So I wonder if they're going to go like with $150 or even $200 for extra storage.
Could be.
But can you imagine a $1,400 iPhone?
Man,
you'd have to be like a sultan. Like an oil sheik to buy an iPhone that's that expensive.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saving up, so they're going to have no trouble shifting as many as they can make.
If they release a 512 gigabyte iPhone, Leander, are you going for the big dog?
Well, no, because I don't think you need it anymore. I mean, I've got I don't even know what I've got now, but I've got like a, you know, I haven't filled up even half of it because everything's in the cloud, you know, so storage just isn't a problem.
I'm in the same boat. I like having stuff stored locally on my phone so it's not constantly going to the cloud and pulling stuff down, but I think 256 is enough for me. I've got 128 gig now, and I'm in the same boat. I don't even have it more than half filled.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And I would think I would rather just pay for more cloud storage now that you can do the family sharing plan, the $10 plan for the 1 terabyte.
It was 2 terabytes now, isn't it?
Oh, 2 terabytes. That's right.
Yeah, they bumped it.
You know, gosh.
Well, Buster, you filled yours up with 4K Sendy videos, right?
Oh, yeah. So many Sendy videos for days. It's nice to be able to have your photo library on your actual phone because I, like my last phone, I think I only had 64 gigs, and every time I would go to the photos, you know, I'd have to download it from the cloud. Like every time, all of them pretty much were on the in the cloud and stuff. So
Right, and that sucks, right? Especially when you're not on Wi-Fi.
Right, exactly. Or you're just out where there's no signal, and you're like, oh, I'd like to see this photo, but whatever. It's blurry, yeah.
Or you're in Thailand. Yeah. I mean, how are you even... How is your cell phone coverage in Thailand?
Dude, Thailand has dope cell phone coverage. Oh, my God.
Really?
The best. Like, everywhere, I have service. AIS? Oh, they're amazing. And, like, they have... they do this stuff where... If they have like what they called like super Wi-Fi spots where it's like 100 megabits per second or something like that,
and are you kidding?
Yeah, and so you just connect to your carrier's public Wi-Fi spots all over town too. So it's super helpful.
Oh, we never figured that out, huh?
Yeah. Did you guys buy SIM cards when you're here?
No. We just like you said, there was coverage everywhere. We got T-Mobile, so T-Mobile has a free worldwide roaming program,
which is
great. So we didn't have any problem at all. But everywhere we went, the Wi-Fi sucked. You know, like at the hotels, hotel Wi-Fi was just dreadful.
It definitely been hit or miss at places. Like you'll go to a restaurant and it'll just be pretty much non-existent.
That's amazing that their Wi-Fi and their LTE though is just so fast. Just when you're out and about, that's crazy. I mean, you would think that they wouldn't be so far advanced and so far ahead of us. I mean, I live in Seattle. We don't even have that cell reception that's that fast.
Yeah, there's been places where I'm like, I've been at, I think I went to like the top highest mountain in Thailand and still had service. It's crazy. Like all the national parks still got service, just like Instagramming it up from there. It's stupid.
I wonder if it's because it's just so dense and so they're able to really just give everyone extra coverage. Because everyone's just kind of packed in there. They don't have to build extra towers. But, of course, remember when the iPhone launched and, like, people in San Francisco couldn't even make phone calls? You guys were dense, and they couldn't even give you enough service for a phone call. So.
Well, right, but here, you know, like, I know this has been true, I think, for a lot of countries, haven't they? You know, their wireless infrastructure has grown at a faster rate than it has in the States. Like, all the carriers here can't add new towers in San Francisco because they can't get the rights. There's spectrum rights, and then there's also land rights, you know, like, to actually where you're going to put the tower. Where you're going to locate it. That's super tricky.
So it's like a regulation issue.
Yeah, well, I think a combination of that. Regulation, spectrum, you know, expense. You know, putting up new towers. I was talking to a friend of mine, one of my neighbors, is doing this in Uganda. They're sticking up all kinds of crazy wireless infrastructure. You know, you just stick up a pole and you stick some, it's all solar powered. So they put a big solar panel on top of it and... you know, and it's a few boxes, you know, that can be run off a solar power and a battery. So it's really easy and cheap to put up.
It's amazing, isn't it? We get so used to regulations in certain areas that when you hear of a place like Uganda doing that, you're like, what, no one's regulating that? I guess not. They can just put up a pole.
Well, I think, I'm pretty sure they have their own regulations, you know, and it complies with their regulations. But I think, you know, they don't... There's all these vested business interests too, you know, like all the cable companies here. You know, they don't want to give up on their cable, right? They don't want to give up on the coax they've laid. They spent billions and billions of dollars in the 90s, you know, laying wire everywhere, and so you know there are competing business interests. I think that make it difficult, and whereas it's expensive to lay copper in other countries, you know, it's really easy and simple to stick up a new cell tower. You know, they were racing across the country. They stick up one tower, and then they go a few miles, and they stick up another one, and you know, within a week, they've strung towers all across, you know, like a huge distance, and they've covered, you know, like a lot of territory.
You think smartphones have proliferated there? Because I always imagine people there using like flip phones.
No, I think they're you know, feature phones mostly, but definitely some smartphones. I mean, there were smartphones everywhere. In fact, I was in, you know. You've seen a lot of smartphones, right, all over Thailand, Buster? Everyone has a smartphone.
Oh, yeah. Even Buddhist monks have smartphones. It's crazy. They're like, what do you need a smartphone?
In their robes?
Yeah.
Yeah, really, I wonder if they have pockets built into those robes.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They must, yeah. Right? Where do they keep their car keys? Their temple keys, I should say. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this facial recognition that's going to be included on iPhone 8. A lot of people have been asking about how it's going to work. Is it going to work in the dark? How fast it's going to be? Those have certainly been some of my questions. Well, I think that we all have nothing to fear. According to this report, Apple or iPhone 8's facial recognition feature will work in a millionth of a second. So far, far faster than Touch ID. It's supposed to be more secure than the existing Touch ID sensor. And it's supposed to even work in the dark. In addition to the regular iPhone sensors you'd expect to find, the upcoming phone will reportedly boast a new structured light sensor, which uses bounced infrared light to work out the depth of different points on your face. And then that information is used to build a 3D mesh of your object, which is compared to the one recorded when setting up the new phone. And then they calculate the time between when the infrared light is sent out and recorded coming back, and that will let the phone work out the depth of measurements for your face. This also means that you won't be able to just use a 2D photo to unlock the phone, which you could do on one of the earlier Samsung Galaxy phones. Yeah. And the facial recognition, I thought this was interesting, was reportedly powered by a company that Apple purchased. It's the same company that made the Kinect motion sensor that was part of Xbox for so long, and I think it's probably now on its way out. And then, of course, we talked about reports last week and the week before about how the phone may actually be able to see your face as you're approaching it and unlock itself, you know, as you're getting closer to it, which would be very cool and also kind of scary. So when the NSA wants to unlock your phone, all you have to do is show it at your face. Oh, you know what else would be weird? Like, if they're like trying to unlock your phone and you were dead and they could like just shine it at your face and unlock it, you know? It's kind of creepy to think about. I wonder if that would work with Touch ID as well. Like, would they be able to use your fingerprints if you're dead on your phone and unlock your phone? Like, why don't they do that? Like, they're always trying to unlock terrorist phones. But can't they just, like, use the body and just unlock the phone?
I want to say I thought there was something about that. Actually, yeah, well, I think they could. Yeah, I thought there was something about heat there. But I know people have created, fake fingers or fake fingerprints that have worked. It's, like, kind of expensive to do it, but...
Well, the face thing is interesting, isn't it? Because it's using this new camera that uses a lot of range finding that's going to be used for AR as well. Augmented reality, so that the camera, both the rear and the front and the rear facing cameras have these range finding capabilities, which is going to be a big reason for people to upgrade to the iPhone 8 because of this. You know, so all the AR kit stuff that's coming out and all these I think we're going to see a ton of AR stuff next year. Like, AR is going to be crazy. I think AR is really going to be it's going to be the hottest thing around. Everyone's going to be pointing their phones, at everything.
Yeah, I hope that people are as interested in it as we are, because I think we're going to be talking about it a lot next year.
Yeah, for sure.
People are going to be building it into everything.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I think ARKit is such a robust API, and it's so capable that it's really easy for developers. You know, like, they don't have to... It used to be really, really sticky and really tough to do this kind of stuff, but, because of ARKit, if you know your way around Apple's SDK, then you can easily add these capabilities to your apps. So I think there's going to be all kinds of crazy applications for it.
Absolutely. I mean, we've already seen so many cool things coming out. I mean, the kind of examples that we've seen already, just in the limited amount of time that developers have had with the new APIs, it just shows. I'm just wait until this technology is mature. The kind of stuff that we're going to get is going to be amazing. All right, Buster, according to this story, it looks like Apple's 3D sensing tech is pretty baller.
Dude,
like way ahead of the curve.
Baller,
right?
Shot caller, Qualcomm can't match this. I guess Qualcomm's the only company that's trying to do the same thing that Apple's doing, but they can't get the software and hardware package to work as well as Apple's. So from like a new report from, I think it was Ming-Chi Kuo, a lot of like the Android manufacturers, they're just kind of going to wait and see how it goes on the iPhone and see if it's actually like a good experience before they decide to copy it. So it'll be...
Which is the way I like the way that's phrased.
Yeah.
Well, what's the name of that, the Asus, isn't it? There's an Asus phone up right now that is like the first sort of comprehensive AR Android handset.
There is?
Is that ringing a bell?
No.
I have to look it up.
I mean, there might be, but I guess it would be
that.
But
does it do the 3D mapping and stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not really sure what the sensors are in it. The Zen phone, right?
Oh, I don't know.
This just came out just recently. But the reviews are really kind of... I don't think it does have the sensing capabilities, because the reviews were really lackluster. So it really wasn't a good experience. It was really inconsistent. It didn't work half the time.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how well Apple's works, because if it works as in a millionth of a second, one of those reports said, then that would be pretty amazing. And you don't even have to look at it. It can be facing down, and you can be sideways, and it'll still map out your face. That would be pretty cool. But Yeah, I don't know if I want it to replace Touch ID. I think it would be weird to not have Touch ID.
I still agree with you there. One of the other parts that I thought was interesting about this story is Ming-Chi Kuo said, why Qualcomm is the most engaged company in the R&D of 3D sensing for the Android camp. They still have a number of issues plaguing them that prevent its tech from being ready for mass market products, which include immature algorithms. I've never heard that phrase before. And thermal problems, which I thought this was interesting because it just goes to show how much effort and development Apple probably had to go through in order to make this technology work. Yeah, and yeah. It's just one of those things, again, we talk about this all the time, right, Leander? Like one of those things that were, it's like a little blip of a feature. I mean, I'm sure they'll pimp this pretty big, but you still don't have any idea of the scale of development that had to go into creating this one feature. It's like when Apple mentioned that swimming update for the Apple Watch, right? And they had like measured like 700 people's heart rates and had like people in wheelchairs and people in pools. And then they include this feature, but you have no idea the scale of development that had to go into developing just that one feature.
Yeah. I read something on Medium. This AR expert said that, you know, the tech is fiendishly difficult and it's been in development for years. You know, I mean, like some of the first demos go back 30 years or so. And, you know, a lot of companies have been working on a lot of on this problem for a long time, you know, like Microsoft with the Holo deck and Google with the
HoloLens. I wish they were working on a Holo deck. That'd be amazing. I would buy that in a second. Are you kidding?
But that, you know, like and you know, there's hundreds of all these different startups as well, like Magic Leap. But they say, like, you know, the problem is the sort of the real world scenarios. You know, like it's really really difficult to get it to work really really well in a real world situation. You know, they show all this stuff in the keynotes and in videos and it looks all slick and it's all, you know, the marketing looks beautiful. But getting it working in the real world is really, really difficult to do. And the reports I've been hearing, you know, is that ARKit does work really well in the real world.
Man, I'm getting excited for the iPhone Pro.
Yeah, I think this AR stuff is really going to be like crazy. I think it's really, really going to take off in a big way and it's going to change a lot of things.
The only thing that is kind of a bummer is I finally found a case that I love for my 7 Plus. It's like this... really super sparkly glitter case from, I think it's pronounced Spigen. Spigen. I used to call it Spigen, but I think it's actually pronounced Spigen. Oh,
the German.
Or actually, this is Spec. This is a Spec case. And I'll link to it in the show notes if you guys want to check it out. This thing is gorgeous. It's like this dark, dark color, but it's full of like green glitter. It's a beautiful case, and it protects really well. It's one of the best cases that I've used for my 7 Plus, and I was thinking about switching now to the iPhone Pro, aka iPhone 8, and, you know, there's just not going to be any great cases available for it for probably a month.
Some people
or so.
Have already got some cases. I got an email a couple of days ago from a case manufacturer who's already been. They've already got their case samples ready.
Do you think that they're actually... ready for the next iPhone, though, or are they just saying they're ready for the next?
Well, no, they've. You
how
know,
do they really know?
A lot of
because they built them made on these.
Yeah, they'll make them on the schematics and stuff. But we've seen them before where companies have said they have, you know, next generation iPhone cases, and it was totally wrong. So.
Right. Yeah. I just don't think they can be sure that they're.
Well, no, they can't. Yeah. They can't at all. It's a huge gamble. But
I think there are probably like a few companies that Apple does trust. Maybe like InCase and Mophy. Probably, I'm sure there's like a few companies that they actually.
There's
do
probably
give
some select
to.
Partners.
Yeah, because they do need some at launch.
That's a good point. They have to have something, right? Besides the Apple leather case and the silicone case.
I think like one of the most annoying things about buying a new iPhone every year is kind of like you're saying, is it takes. Like 6 months until like the good cases start coming out because the first batches are usually I just feel like rushed and ugly and you know not that good and then later on as the cycle matures then you get like decent cases and stuff.
That's why I think for the next phone I'm not sure I'm gonna upgrade a year after. I've been on this kick like you guys where I upgrade every year and the iPhone 8 is gonna be such a dramatic. New piece of technology, I don't think they're going to change it significantly for a while. It will probably be the same for at least 2, possibly even 3 years. And so I might just stick with this phone for a while. We'll see.
What are you talking about? Are you delusional?
We'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, we'll see what happens with the iPhone Pro 2 or whatever they end up releasing. We'll see what features it has. Maybe I'll be upgrading anyway. I say that now, but you know, yeah, and then right. I see the new device and I'm like, I gotta upgrade. I can't wait.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta have the newest and the best.
You'll be selling your kidney, your kids on Craigslist.
Kidneys, yeah. I've only got one left. I'll sell that one too. You don't need two. You don't really. Even need kidneys. Yeah. I heard if you have your liver works well, you don't even need your kidneys. let's talk a little bit about this autonomous car, Leander. I wish I had my soundboard set up so I could play this sound.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah, so according to the New York Times, Apple's secretive Project Titan self-driving car project has switched gears, transforming into an effort to build a self-driving shuttle bus. It's called... This is what they reported. Called the Palo Alto Infinite Loop, or PAIL, P-A-I-L. The shuttle would carry Apple employees between buildings. Like, when I read this, I was like, are you going to be kidding? You've got to be kidding.
This is what your project has turned into?
A shuttle bus?
A shuttle bus?
It's like a joke.
It's got to be like the Johnny Cab of Cupertino.
Yeah.
Right. I really hope they put that guy up there, but they should make him look like Tim Cook or something.
Or Johnny Ive, yeah.
Yeah, it, or Johnny Ive.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's, you know, it's, the story kind of hedged its bets. It said that it you know, this thing could be like a test bed and for their autonomous car research. You know, a way to test it out, the stuff in the real world. And in fact, you know, they point out that Google did this in the early days of its self-driving car. You know, like their first incarnations were shuttles that drove employees around the Google campus down in Silicon Valley. But, you know, it had some really interesting details, the report, though, about the kind of things they were looking at. You know, apparently they investigated several innovative ideas, including motorized doors that open and close silently, augmented reality displays for the interior of the car, new ways of incorporating a light sensor, essential to driverless cars. You know, so they were going to put all the sensors, shrink them down, and you know, disguise them into the body of the car. Mm-hmm. Getting rid of the steering wheel and the gas pedals, and the most interesting thing was sticking completely spherical wheels on it.
Well, when they say that, did they mean like basketballs? Like,
yeah, it was going to sit on. It would sit on four giant balls,
like actual balls,
and so it could move sideways as well as backwards and forwards.
Man, how would that work though? Because you have to have an axle going through it somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, well, I wonder
it'd be
how
like
it would
BB-8,
spin.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so you'd have like some work, type of gyroscope, like something inside the wheels that like pushes them
or
forward.
Or maybe like a. Like a ball bearing or something. Like, what I mean? Like,
you could have a housing over
like a
it,
socket.
Right?
Yeah. Like the ball would go into a socket.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like a ball and socket enclosure. Right. Totally. That's exactly how you could do it. Because the thing would look like a ridiculous, you know,
like
really
Homer
bizarre.
Car. Yeah. I mean, how are you going to put 20-inch blades on something with some balls on the bottom?
Yeah.
That doesn't even work. That doesn't even make sense. All right. Well, this hopefully will be it's the next step in developing the Apple Car that they're going to be working on. But from the report, it kind of sounded like they don't really know what they're doing at this point. Like, well, there seems like there has been a lack of leadership. No one really knows what their vision is for the car.
This is what they were saying, yeah, and that, you know, there's been fighting inside the company. There was a fight between the guy that was first running the project, Steve Zadesky, and he was, you know, he was like a product engineer, which means I think a guy that specialized in figuring out how to make these products in the factories. This is what, you know, when those early reports came out and Steve Zadesky was in charge, it was like, and they'd hired hundreds of people. The early reports are saying that they'd hired hundreds of people. They had this guy, this product engineer in charge, which made it seem like they were already trying to figure out how to make this into a product. In other words, it had gone beyond the prototyping stage. They'd already figured out what they want to do. Now they're investigating how to make it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then there were reports, and like, you know, German at Bloomberg was reporting last year exactly the same thing, that there was a whole bunch of turmoil. Zadesky was, like, taken off the project. He's still at Apple, but he's no longer in charge of it. He had... you know, quote unquote personal problems, or he was taken off it for personal reasons, you know, whatever that means. You know, maybe there's a lot of pressure, you know, maybe
maybe he was fighting with Johnny Ive.
Right. And so Johnny Ive, you know, like apparently wanted to like rethink the whole car experience, you know, like, so this is an opportunity for, you know, like if they're going to be autonomous, if they're going to be driven by robots, here's a way to like completely rethink the car, which, you know, is a fascinating idea. This is why I thought he has a chauffeur now. You know, did you read that? That he has a Donny Ive has a show for everybody.
Yeah, we talked about this on a past show, and was this your theory? Because I thought this was a great theory.
Right, my theory was that, you know, like, he does it because he's a big driver. He's a big motorhead, right? He goes to Goodwood every year, which is a big car festival in the UK, and he has all these exotic cars, Bentleys and Aston Martins, and he loves to drive. And he drove up and down from San Francisco, where he lives, to Cupertino, where he works, every day, you know, commuting by car. And now he has a chauffeur. And the line in the report, the New Yorker report that first mentioned this, said that he reluctantly agreed. And it was also that line, reluctantly agreed. Why would anyone reluctantly agree to having a chauffeur? You know, who's going to force a chauffeur on somebody? And then why would they agree to have it if they love to drive a car? So I was thinking, well, you know, it's an analog for having a self-driving car. He has someone else drive the car. And then it gives him time to, like, figure out what would you do if you didn't have to drive a car anymore? If it just go wherever you told
it to. Right? How would you interact with a car if you never had to control it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I thought, you know, that was my theory anyway. Of course, it's kind of thin, but based on flimsy evidence. But you know, I think you know, it definitely is. It's an interesting idea anyway, isn't it? Because I think this is exactly the kind of thing that Apple would do. You know, they'd want to see, you know, what the experience would be like. Anyway, I can't believe this story. This story is cut up a load of times. In fact, it's like taken as gospel now. One, I don't want to believe. One, I can't believe it because I don't want to believe it.
Yeah.
So I'm in denial. That's for sure.
All the hype of the Apple car has turned into a VW bus for the Apple campus. It's hard to swallow.
It's just too big. And, you know, like, it's going to happen. Like, you know, like, if you look at... even the electrification of cars, right? Cars are going to be electrified for sure. And a whole bunch of car manufacturers have already announced that they're going to be selling, you know, electric-only vehicles in the next decade. So I just can't believe that Apple would pass up an opportunity like this, because this is going to be such disruption in this market, one of the world's biggest industries already, you know? And for a company like Apple, it's just too big a price to look at, you know, to stare up and to turn it into a bucket bus pail. It's ridiculous. Like,
the name is horrible too, right?
I think they've been trolled, to be honest. I think it's going to be a joke.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right, because I would love to see Apple come out with an actual car. You know, kind of on a tangent, one of the things I often think about with electric cars is... one of the main components of the battery, as far as I understand, is a product called rare earth mineral. And as the name implies, it's a rare earth mineral. There's not a lot of it, and a lot of it is sourced from China, as far as I understand. And with all these cars moving to electric, they're going to have all these batteries and all this mineral. And if it's rare, are we going to be able to mine enough of it to... change the name from rare earth mineral to commonly available mineral to put into all these batteries? Because there's going to be batteries for everything. I mean, everything's going to be battery powered now.
Well,
yeah,
they have enough of it.
We'll invent a new type of battery that's powered by something else, you know, like potatoes or something.
You think so?
Yeah.
Unobtainium, isn't that what they called it in James Cameron's movie? What was it called with all the blue people? Avatar.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's an old.
Switched up unobtainium. Okay, well, before we move on to story time, let me just touch on this MacBook Pro story. The 8th generation MacBook Pro, well, let me back up. The 8th generation Intel processors that could fit into a 13-inch MacBook Pro have just been announced, and these new U-series chips are suitable for a 13-inch MacBook Pro because they're all 15-watt chips. But the great part is, and this is... one of the reasons why I never purchased a 13-inch MacBook Pro, the 13-inch models, all had only dual-core chips. And if you add multi-threading to that, you can only have 4 threads going at one time, whereas the 15-inch model had 4 cores and 8 threads total. Well, the new chips are power-efficient, and they have 4 cores. And that means with hyper-threading, you have 8 threads total. And... that means essentially that you could get a 13-inch MacBook Pro that is just as powerful as a 15-inch MacBook Pro, which is exactly what I have been wanting for years now. The only reason I never get a 13-inch MacBook Pro is because they're just not powerful enough, especially in the multitasking realm. And so the possibility of getting one of these quad-core chips is really exciting to me. And get this. This is the really cool part. So we really haven't had that much improvement in performance over the last, 3 or 4 generations of Intel chips. But Intel is saying that the 8th generation Core i5 and Core i7 chips are up to 40% faster than the 7th generation Kaby Lake processors. So the ones that just came out. 40% faster. Up to 40% faster, I should say. And that's really crazy if you take into account that the first MacBook Pro with Touch Bar used a 6th generation Skylake processor. So I don't even know how much faster the new Kaby Lake processors are over Skylake, but here's an example of an older chip. Intel has said that its 8th generation Core processors are up to twice as fast as its 5-year-old Ivy Bridge chipsets. Ivy Bridge chips, I should say. And it puts it into this perspective. It said users can output 106-second 4K video in as little as 3 minutes with a new 8th generation Intel chip. But with a 5-year-old PC, something using an Ivy Bridge chip, that same file export would take you 45 minutes. So much, much faster than the chips that we've been seeing come out of Intel for the last several years. So very exciting stuff.
Why is it such a big jump?
I have no idea. I do not know why Intel has been releasing such iterative, small increases in performance in their chips. Buster, were you going
to
say something?
When are these chips supposed to come out?
Well, they're available now. So whenever Apple wants to include them in the 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Oh, so we could get that like later this year, like maybe the end of the year or early next year?
Yeah, we could.
Oh, shoot.
And hopefully we will. Hopefully Apple is serious about increasing the performance on all of their Macs. That's been a big problem. It's something that we've talked about here on the show a lot. And it seems like Apple is becoming more serious about updating their machines more often, like they did with the current MacBook Pro.
And I've heard... What? I saw some people, going back to the car story and this, some people have talked about how maybe the car was a distraction, and you see Apple kind of like doubling down on other products now that they're just doing a lame shuttle bus that self-drives. It's, you know, so maybe... Maybe abandoning the car project is a good thing if it means better Macs, better iPhones, and everything else, which I'm kind of hoping for because I could never afford Johnny Ive's fancy self-driving car.
Right. I mean, it's going to be, like $50,000. If you want to upgrade the memory, it's going to cost you $55,000.
Oh.
You want 256 gigabytes of storage. So I'm with you there. I think that, at least for now, updating the Macs is going to affect a more broad spectrum of people. Plus, you know, I've complained about this 1,000 times. For the price that you pay for a MacBook Pro, they need to be faster. They need to be better. A 15-inch MacBook Pro now can cost you over $3,000 with sales tax, and that is an outrageous price for a computer, in my opinion. And that's one of the reasons why I've been avoiding getting one. I just can't stomach the cost, especially when you take into account that it is not as fast CPU-wise as other much cheaper PCs on the market. I know that pure speed isn't the whole story on these machines. There's a lot of other components that are much better than PCs. I get that. But just from a pure horsepower perspective, I want some ponies under the hood if I'm going to be spending $3,000 on a PC or on a MacBook Pro. So it'd be great to get some more power under the hood of a 13-inch MacBook Pro, because those are actually, you know, quite affordable computers. Okay, let's go ahead and move into the segment I know everyone has been waiting for. They're going to be hanging off your every word. Leander Caney, you're back from your trip from Asia, and I should say Japan and Thailand, and I asked you to come up with the best part of your trip. What was the best story that you got out of the entire experience with your family? What was the coolest thing that you did? Any of those questions?
It better
be good.
Well, we hung with elephants in Thailand.
Oh, you did?
And we took a cooking class, and we rode bullet trains in Japan. But for me, though, I think the best thing, the most enjoyable thing, was riding bicycles around Kyoto.
Yeah, you said you did that last time, didn't you?
Last time?
Last time when you were there in Japan, didn't you say you did that with your brother?
Oh, I rode around. Yeah, I did. I rode around Tokyo. Yeah. That's
and right. So it was your favorite again. Gee, why is
you're
that?
Right. Well, I just love to ride a bike. I really love to ride a bike. And Kyoto
did you
was like
stop at all those little like beer kiosks.
They didn't have any. We couldn't find any any beer machines.
I thought that was the whole point of your story.
It used to be. I mean, like me and my brother, we all went around, Tokyo, like drinking out of these beer machines. But, like, we couldn't find any. We found there was one beer machine, you know, by coincidence, right across from where we were staying.
Mm-hmm.
at this Airbnb.
By coincidence, wink, wink. Hey, Tracy, no. I really like this hotel. I think we should stay here.
We should stay here, right. Well, the place we were staying was it was actually an office. You know, it was in an office building, and someone was renting out this office with six mats on the floor. There's no bathroom, so we had to go to the local bathhouse to mm-hmm. take a shower, mm-hmm. Which is like it's you know, like these bathhouses. It's you have to strip off naked, and so the kids weren't too keen on that.
Oh, wait! Did you go with your kids? You all had to strip down naked.
I didn't. Well, Nadine and my wife Tracy did. They went together, and they were quite happy being naked together. But then my kids wouldn't go with me.
So weird.
So they went. They went. They were too shy to go with me. So I had to go separately from them.
I would have wanted to go separately. I would be whole family naked together. What kind of weird vacation is this?
Bit weird. But you know, these bathhouses though, it's like being in a public lavatory, and like, you know, everyone is furiously not looking. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They're furiously staring ahead. You know, they're making it very careful not to look.
Uh-huh.
Even though I'm sure they did.
That's
and I did.
I'm sure you
can't
you
help
did all...
it. You have to sneak a quick one, right? So But this place we were staying, as well as having a beer machine across the road, had six bikes, and so we rode these bikes all around the city, and it's fantastic. It's like the infrastructure there, the bike infrastructure is fantastic,
mm-hmm.
and I got great respect for the drivers there. They were really, really good. They were really, really careful with all the bikes, and there's bikes everywhere, on the sidewalk, in the road. They're going on the wrong side of the road, they're on this side of the road, they're on that side of the road, they're coming out of this alleyway, that alleyway. You know, like there was bikes everywhere. Everyone was riding bikes. It was like bike heaven. It really was great, really, really fantastic, and you can just like, you know, park a bike. They had restricted parking, but they tow your bike if you put it in the wrong place. There's so many bikes
they tow it. Wow.
It chokes up the street. So they had restricted parking. You had to go to a bike parking garage for your bikes at certain parts of the city. It was really beautiful. It's a really beautiful city, and it's really great to ride a bike around. That was the highlight for me.
I've always wanted to go to Japan.
Yeah, it's an awesome place.
I really like all the Japanese people I've met. I feel like they're very courteous, and they usually like my jokes, which is great. And, of course, that's probably why they're being courteous, actually. It's probably why I think they like my jokes. And some of the pictures you got really portray how beautiful the city is. You were in Tokyo, right?
Well, we went to Tokyo, and then we took a bullet train to Kyoto for 3 days. And then we went back to Tokyo.
I'm not sure which city I saw pictures from, but there was one with all those umbrellas.
Yeah, that was in Tokyo. Yeah,
it was a striking photograph. Huh. It just culturally, the whole city had just a completely different vibe than what I'm used to. And then also, there's so many people everywhere.
That's the problem with Tokyo. Yeah, that's exactly the big problem. It's just like everywhere you go, at any time of day or night, there's millions of people.
Wow.
It became kind of really wearying. I found it like kind of tiresome. That's why I like Kyoto a little better, because it was a little more mellow. Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite as hectic as Tokyo. But, you know, like the minute you get outside the door, like the sidewalk's jammed. And, you know, there's people lining up. There was like a donut shop on the corner. There was a line at 7 in the morning for people to get donuts that lasted all day and night. This is like 24 hours, you know. And then getting on the subway was crazy, getting through the turnstiles, you know, getting put there. We almost got pushed onto a train. You know, you must have seen those videos of those guards that stand on the platform. They've got mm-hmm. white gloves on. And then if they start pushing people into the train, into the carriage, to like jam more people in.
So, really?
Yeah.
So they're like lean into you.
Yeah, it almost happened to us. But, you know, we were jammed into this train, and you get even more and more jammed, more and more people coming on. It, you know, it does become kind of like exhausting, in the end, and I don't know how people put up with it. Actually, we went out to the suburbs, and like this is in sort of central in the center of Tokyo, and it's a 10 million people city. It's like so big, it's huge.
It's hard to fathom, actually.
It is. It's difficult to wrap your noodle around. Yeah, and there are so many different areas, you know, and each one is it's like Times Square, you know, times 10. Mm-hmm. Huge buildings, huge billboards, like shopping. The country is really, really commercial. Like there's, you know, there's shopping everywhere. There's more ads. It's almost like in a virtual reality, you know, simulation. You know, because mm-hmm. everywhere you look, there was ads like everywhere, and shopping and you know and retail opportunities. You know, like very, very, very commercial country. Very, very rich country too, though, as well.
Have you seen the movie Lost in Translation with Bill Murray?
Yeah, I saw it years ago. Yeah.
That was the first time that movie did a a good job showing you the scale of Japan. I mean, I kind of feel like Japan was one of the characters in that movie, and it showed you all the architecture and what it's like living in that city. Huh. And that was the first time I think I really had gotten a sense of the scale of Japan, how massive the city is and how many people actually live there.
Yeah.
Because it's unfathomable to imagine that many people living in such a small area together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the suburbs are much nicer. Like, you know, we went out to a couple of districts that were sort of, you know, a bit further out, and they were much nicer, much calmer. Mm-hmm.
I should say Tokyo, living in Tokyo.
Yeah, Tokyo, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, central Tokyo is really kind of a madhouse. It's really, you know, it is really, because it was blazing hot too and really humid. So,
yummy.
Yeah, it was kind of like a recipe for, and then of course we're trying to troop all across the city, like trying to get in about 10 different things every day. You know, we're going to go here and then we're going to go over there and we're going to check this out and check that out. So it was sort of tiring. But some of the outskirts, my brother used to live there, and we went to his old neighborhood, which is Denen Chofu, which is like it's still central Tokyo, but it was a lot calmer, and that was a really nice neighborhood, really beautiful neighborhood. You know, really nice little train station they have there, and it was on a much smaller scale. You know, it was like a regular high street there with all these different shops and places to eat and these nice houses. You know, like it's a fascinating city though. Japan is a totally fascinating place. My one son was like, you know, the one who's into Godzilla, and he's a total Japanophobe anyway. Japanophile.
Otherwise, he didn't want to leave the hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
He stayed in the hotel the entire time asking.
Well,
to
all the places we stayed in Tokyo, they're all like little tiny one room places, and there was like six of us all sleeping on the floor.
Oh my gosh!
You know, with two beds between us or whatever, so we had to sleep on the floor and little tiny bathrooms and stuff. But it was really, really a trip, really, really fascinating place.
Serious question: how many of those Japanese guys did you get into fights with in the pubs? You knock any of them out?
No.
Teach them what you're about. Not no one.
No.
Come on.
No. That was. Did I tell you? Well, I took. Did you make base that question on that story I told about? You know, when I worked at a sushi restaurant here in San Francisco.
No. But now we need to hear that story too.
Well, because the guy that ran it was this. The chef was Japanese, and he was a bit of an alcoholic, right? So he'd show up to work like blind drunk, and for some reason he totally hated me. He really hated my guts, but he thought I was a boxer. Uh-huh. And so every night he'd cook up a meal, and then we'd all have sake. So we'd be docking sakes back, and he'd be like, "I hate you. I really hate you." So he'd go, "You're English boxing. I kick your ass. My Aikido. I take you on, and I kick your fucking ass." And he would threaten me. This would happen almost every night. And he ran the place, right? So, but he never fired me. I don't know why. I
was completely... Did you ever fight him?
No, of course not. I would just be laughing at it, which would enrage him. I'd just be laughing because I thought it was funny. It was like, I don't know where he got this idea. He was convinced I was a boxer, and then he wanted to like take me on with Aikido. He wanted to like have an Aikido versus. It was like this Merriweather, you know, the Mayweather, this MMA fight coming up this weekend, you know?
Yeah.
But Aikido versus boxing. Because I don't box. I can't fight with a toffee. You know?
You could have boxed his ears. I know that much.
I was bigger than him, I guess, taller. But
that's probably why he was trying to take you down.
I don't want to fight him because he was so drunk, he wouldn't feel any pain. You know, it wouldn't be impossible to beat him.
He'd probably bite, too.
Yeah.
When people get that drunk, they fight dirty, man. They'll bite your ear off. Okay, well... Should I tell my solar eclipse story? Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I want to hear about
the solar eclipse story.
Yeah.
Did either of you guys get to witness it? No, you couldn't have because neither of you were.
I was on
the
plane
States.
Coming back, okay, so we missed it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell it really quickly. So I decided to go see the solar eclipse, which it was going to be a huge pain in the ass. There's only a narrow band across the United States where you'd get to be in the path of totality, and that is the area in which the sun would be covered up 100% by the moon. And I live pretty close to Salem, Oregon, which is where I needed to go. And so I was kind of thinking I would stay here at first, but I was like, no, I need to go down there and see the full experience because, you know, I don't want to settle for 98%. So I'm just going to go down there. So Friday night at like 8:30, I finally decide I'm going to leave. And so I drive down to Salem, Oregon. It takes me like 4.5 hours to get there. I arrive at midnight and I wake up, I don't know, it at like 5-6 in the morning because I have to drive from Portland. I crashed at my friend's house to go to Salem, and I didn't want to get stuck in traffic because they were warning that the traffic was going to be terrible. So I get there, and I didn't know what I was doing. This whole thing was kind of on a whim, and so I just set my GPS to take me to Salem, and Google drops me off like in the middle of downtown Salem, and I had heard that there were 7-Elevens that were still selling these lunar spectacles that you need to wear if you're going to look at the sun. And so I was wondering where I was going to get these glasses. I race tried to like stop by two Walmarts and get them, but everywhere was sold out, right? Scalpers were buying the lunar spectacles and like trying to mark them up and sell them on Amazon and stuff for like $100. And I was like, I'm not doing that. So I go to the 7-Eleven and I ask them if they have glasses, and the girl says, no, but I think they're giving them away for free down at the Capitol building. And I was like, oh, well, where's the Capitol building? And she's like, oh, it's only like a mile from here. So I drive down there, I park my car, and I walk to the Capitol building. And I'm like in the perfect situation. They have a scientist standing outside this beautiful square in front of the Capitol building, and she's narrating the entire process of the solar eclipse, which I thought was going to be over in like 2 minutes. I thought it was just like this real quick, you know, sun's covered, then it's not. But it's actually like a 3-hour process. And if you don't have glasses, you can't actually look at the sun and see it being covered. And you can't really notice that the sun is being covered until it's like 95% covered by the moon and the light actually starts to become affected. So this really nice stranger realized I didn't have glasses, and he just gave me a pair for free. So I'm like, sweet. Now I got free glasses. I got a scientist on a microphone telling me what's going on as it's happening. We're in this huge square. All these people are really excited. And then the sun starts getting covered. And I didn't really notice anything until the sun was like probably like 90% obscured. And then you start to really see the area around you start to change. The light becomes eerie and strange. Yeah. It becomes darker. And the scientist pointed out that as the shape of the sun changes because it's being covered, the shadows start acting strangely. And so do the birds, by the way. The birds start losing their minds. They start flying everywhere. And I took some pictures of like the shadows coming through the trees, and they're all in the shape of crescent moons. In fact, I posted this on my Instagram. If you want to see what I'm talking about, I'll link to it in the show notes. All the shadows start to become these strange shapes. They take on the shape of the sun, and the sun is being obscured now. And that's how you know you're starting to get close to totality. And then the sun stops hitting you with infrared heat, so it becomes cold. And then the sky starts turning blue. All the birds started going crazy and flying all around. And then you have your glasses on, and you're looking at the sun, and the moon is getting closer and closer to covering it completely. And at the very last moment, it looks like a bright wire, like a filament inside of a light bulb. It's just a very slim wire shape of sun that's still unobscured. And it's incredible how much light, even that small segment, still pours out. It really gives you an idea of how powerful the sun is and how bright the light is on the sun when you can see such a small, narrow section still pouring out so much light. And then in a last burst of light, the sun is completely covered, and the strange thing is, it is like a spiritual experience. I know this is cliche. You've probably heard people say this, but when you are standing there under this celestial art show and you're there with all these people and the entire sky is blue, the air around you is blue, and then you look all around you, and all around you is a horizon. You know, like normally the horizon is just on one side of you, but when you're inside the totality, the horizon is 360 degrees everywhere you look, and the sun is impossible to describe. You'll never see a picture of it that shows how incredible it looks when it's totally obscured. It is this bright silver ring. And it's extremely bright, but you can look at it without your glasses. And when the sun went full totality, people lost it. There were people playing bongos. There were people dancing. The guy next to me was crying.
Yeah.
I mean, I was
trying to... scream and stuff, right?
Yes, they went insane. It was very tribal. It was very tribal because you realized you were witnessing something incredible.
Yeah.
And I was actually taking a video of it, and I was trying to describe the sensation. And I was getting choked up. I could barely get my words out for whatever reason. I just, you know, it just that the experience was so powerful that it really kind of makes you emotional. And it lasted for probably, I don't know, 90 seconds. It's a pretty long period when you're in the total path of totality. And then the sun starts showing from the other side. That narrow wire appears again. And it feels like dusk again, and then everyone just starts cheering, and then I look at my phone and I realize I'd forgotten to hit the record button.
There we go.
So I didn't get any of the video, and I was super bummed about that. But there was a guy next to me who had a really professional mic and camera setup, and he'd gotten the entire ordeal, and he's going to be publishing it on YouTube. So I got his card. I'm hopefully I'll be in that video because I'm standing right next to that guy. But
so they're going to hear you babbling.
Yeah, I'm probably just like, it's so beautiful, man. I probably just said that.
I feel so little, so small. Oh my God, I'm just an infinite speck.
We're just specks in the cosmos, man. It's cliche, I know, but and people try to downplay it, like, oh, it's just an eclipse. It's not really a big deal. All I can say is,
oh, no, I heard everyone who's, you know, like all these eyewitness accounts, everyone says it's the most incredible experience.
It's a spiritual experience. Yeah.
You know, like one in a lifetime, impossible to capture, like with photos.
Yeah.
Supposed to be very, very strange, very, very unique, very, very moving. I'm dying to go see one. I was actually thinking of flying to Argentina because there's one coming up, isn't there?
There's going
to
be one in 2024 over most of the U.S. Yeah. too. So.
Right.
Yeah, but Leander will be dead by then. What? He's got to go now, man. Yeah, that's why I forced myself to go down there because it was a huge pain in the ass. I was exhausted the entire time, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and the path of totality hasn't stretched across the continental United States since 1979.
Yeah.
And the one that happens in 2024 is only gonna cross the very eastmost part of the United States. You'd have to go to, I don't know, like Maine or something to actually see it. I don't remember where exactly it crosses. And so I had heard there were people who would chase these things all over the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I understand why. Yeah. I would go to Argentina to see another one. I thought it was an incredibly powerful communing with the cosmos, and you felt like you were on another planet. It was just a very surreal experience, and something that I will never forget as long as I live. And I had also just eaten like 8 mushrooms before, so I wonder how many people there were high. Actually, it had to have been a lot.
In Oregon, everybody.
Yeah, wow. For sure. Yeah. Surprisingly, I didn't smell any of the skunk in the air. It was just pure air everywhere around me. Anyway, that's my story. We should go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. Hey, if you want to come tell us about your path of totality, or if you want to discuss any of the things that we talked about on today's show, we are on Twitter. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Leander is L. Kenny. Buster is B-S-T-3-R. This has been the cult cast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the cult cast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys and gals next time. Namaste. That's what I should have said when it happened. That was the perfect word.
Yeah.
Just to turn to my neighbors, I'm like, namaste, my brother.
I saw some stuff on Twitter, like people with a lot of private planes were circling around Portland, right, in the ocean.
Oh, yeah, I saw a bunch of helicopters, too. That might have been what those were.
Yeah.
I can't articulate to you how incredible it was, Leander. Well, if you have an opportunity to do it, I would
I'll send you this
go.
Link. I was reading this thing on Kotke. You know Kotke, that blog? Do you know that guy, Jason Kotke?
Sounds familiar.
So he's been around forever. Like, it's one of the oldest blogs. And I'll send you a link. He had some stuff I was reading this morning about how fucking strange the eclipse is. He said some people, if you're on higher ground, what happens is that you suddenly see this big black thing racing at you, and it's the shadow of the moon coming across the ground,
oh,
and it's
wow.
moving at 1,800 miles an hour. So the minute you see it, it's on top of you. And he said, that's why people were screaming, because they're like, it looks like you're going to get hit with something, you know? And then suddenly you're in this complete black, you know, in the blackness of the shadow. And that was supposed to be, the description of this was really made it sound like, I've got to see that. That really sounds awesome.
Well, his experience is more dramatic than mine, maybe because he was higher up.
Yeah.
But I think no matter where you are, as long as you're in the total path of totality, because, you know, like I could have stayed in Portland because my friend lives in Portland. He's got this ginormous mansion, too, which is like so cool to hang out at. So he's like, dude, just stay here and we're going to get like 98% coverage. And I almost did. But then I was like, you know, I'm almost in Salem. I might as well just go the extra mile. And I'm glad that I did, because, like I said, the sun is so bright that when you're under the area that's just 98% covered, you can't even look at the sun because that one little sliver is so incredibly bright. You don't get the same experience. The only way to get the full experience is to be in the path of totality. Right. And then you can look up at it and be like, and beat your bongos and hug your neighbors next to you. Like, I made friends, like, the guy next to me, like, he and his whole family were there, and we were all just, like, hugging and smiling. It was just, it's cool.
Yeah, I'm going to go
see
one.
I made love to his wife. Did you just hear what I said, Buster?
Yeah.
All right, let me stop this recording. We've gone long enough.
All right.
Leander!
Hello, Efon.
Oh, I bet you're just feeling great after 3 weeks of straight drinking with your family.
Actually, you know, it didn't take that much of a toll. I did. I you know, made the happy discovery that I can drink again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I had a couple of beers, you know, most days. And yeah, it was great. You know, no hangovers. Weird. It's really strange.
You gave your body some time to recover, and now you're ready to get back at it, eh, Gov?
I guess that's what it is, yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
That's what I like to hear.